But your first fight in Michigan, was that a strip club?
Yeah, I end up like getting pounded on. I'm like on the ground, I'm like, you know, trying to kick this dude off me. And all of a sudden this guy just goes limp. And I see my brother standing there with a 2x4, 10 seconds left in the fight. I tear my ACL, MCL, meniscus, like my knee is like gone. I was having like kidney, like liver failure. Like I was in rough shape. Like she like literally saved my life. And like I've seen that like more times than I care to admit. And not bad for a little hillbilly from a small town.
What's good, y'all? Your boy Brandon back again, another episode of the On a Run podcast, man. This week, we've got a very special guest, man. He's here in Vegas now, but we got Michigan's own Cody Stamann. Welcome to the On a Run podcast, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Absolutely, man. We reached out to you because we've been following your career for a little while. Obviously, seeing you in the UFC. But more than that, just your Instagram looks like you're always having fun, man. You're always outside doing stuff. And we're like, man, let's chop it up with this guy. It'll probably be some pretty good stories.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, everybody gets to know you as a fighter, but people don't realize that, like, we're just, like, real human beings, too.
And, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm just, like, a hillbilly from Michigan who happened to be pretty good at fighting. So, you know, like, when I got in the UFC, you know, obviously made a little bit of money and did all the stuff, like, a little white trash hillbilly like me would want to do, you know? So, yeah, I keep it pretty interesting. I was just telling you that, like, as soon as I get done with this podcast, I literally have to go up to one of my rental properties in Duck Creek and like work on it all night because I got renters in there tomorrow. So
there you go.
What an adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back a little bit though in your career, your first professional MMA fight, or I guess, I don't know if it was your first professional fight, but your first fight in Michigan, was that a strip club?
Yeah. So like in Michigan, MMA, so there was no like sanctioning governing body for amateur MMA. So like there was no rules basically. Like you could fight whoever, like didn't matter the weight class.
It was
like
just
there
like
weren't
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. They're like I fought this dude like that was like in a biker gang, like a like he had leathers on, you know what I mean? He's like patched up, like him and his whole like biker gang. And I'm like this 18-year-old kid with like long hair that like I was completely clueless. I had no idea really what was going on. I trained MMA for like maybe a month. You know, I'd wrestled and boxed before, but, and I was like pretty convinced that I could kick the shit out of anybody, but like, I'd never really been in like that kind of situation. And like this was like a grown man that I was fighting.
How much bigger than you was he?
Quite a bit bigger. I mean, they said that he weighed in at like 155, but he looked like a pretty solid dude. And like, when I realized that he was the guy I was fighting, I was like, crap my pants. I'm like, dad, I don't know, man. This guy doesn't, I don't think we're in the same weight class. But the cage was like the size of this couch. So
damn,
the
what?
Second, it was, dude, it was, yeah, I know. It was literally in between two stripper poles. So you imagine like the cage wasn't very big. And so it was like, I took one step and just threw the biggest overhand I could. And I just dusted this dude, put him out cold. He went face down right there. And I swung like two more times at nothing in the air, realized that he was on the ground and just started like wailing on this guy. And then the ref like basically tackled me off of him. And I didn't even really realize what was going on, but the ref had been like trying to pull me off him. And I was just
like,
no,
he's not out yet.
Oh yeah.
Yet.
Like he's and this guy's like face down sleeping. I wish I had a video of it. Cause it's really, really gnarly. I mean, the guy goes out unconscious and I'm just wailing on him. The ref's trying to pull me off. It was messed up. That was a messed up experience, but
in front of the strippers.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And then one of my dad's buddies like bought me my first lap dance, and that was my
right after the fight.
And I'm like, I love this.
Let's do this.
I think I'm gonna make a career out of this.
You were just 18.
Yeah, 18. Yeah, man, just a
what
little.
What made you want to pursue fighting? Like growing up in Michigan, obviously there's not that many UFC fighters from Michigan or professional MMA fighters. Really, there's been a lot more now, but you were one of the guys that really paved the way.
Yeah.
But what was it? What was it like growing up? Was it hard to stay out of trouble?
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say I was like a troublemaker, but if somebody had an issue, I wasn't the kid that was going to like talk it out with them. You know what I mean? I wasn't talking about my feelings with people. Like if you had a problem with me, like I confronted you. And if you got any sort of aggressive towards me, like I was fighting you. And I was known for that. And I mean, obviously it didn't serve me very well growing up, but I grew up in like a pretty rough, like little country town. So like people scrapped, you know what I mean? And like everyone knew that like, if you like looked at me wrong, like I was going to square up with you and like you had to decide whether you wanted to fight me or not, you know? But yeah. So, I mean, I feel like fighting isn't something that like I necessarily chose. Like I was fighting people when I was like, you know, like just got out of diapers, you know what I mean? I was ready to scrap everybody. I've been that way my whole life. Fighting, if anything, you know, professional fighting, if anything, like kind of like tamed me in a way that like, now I don't really, you know, I'm like, okay, dude, you're tough. Like, leave me alone, you know? Because I've fought
like
enough.
The discipline?
Yeah, I think the discipline of it. And also, you know, like once it becomes a career, you know, stakes are a little bit higher. You know, I can't just be going to the bar and laying people out. You know, I think there's, and like, I've fought enough to know that like, I don't really need to prove myself to anybody. Right, right. You know what I mean? Like, if some guy like thinks he can kick my ass, like, I don't care. You know what I mean?
You don't need sparring anymore. You're like, I'm good.
Yeah, like, I'm like, dude, like, I don't have to prove to you that, like,
it's like if you're a NASCAR driver and someone's trying to race you.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm all right.
What are we doing?
Yeah, 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 exactly. That's a great analogy. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, yeah, we do it day in and day out. You know, like, I fight, like, some of my best friends in the gym, like, every day. So it's, you know, I'm not trying to fight anybody unless I really, really have to. And then when I have to, like, I pull a strap. I'm not fighting for it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Like, do you remember your first fight?
First fight? Yeah.
Not professional, like growing up. Do you remember?
Yeah, that? Yeah. I actually got whooped up pretty good.
Nah.
This kid was trying to steal my bike. And like, obviously, like, I wasn't gonna let him steal my bike, but he was a bigger kid and he said, come on, just let me ride it. And I was like, no, dude, like, get away from me. Man, I was probably like 10. Like 10 years old. My little brother was 6. He was with me. And, you know, he had his, like, I think he was, like, just out of training wheel. So, like, we were young. We were, like, little kids. And we had, like, this campground where we, like, hung out all summer. And, yeah, so this kid, like, tries stealing my bike. So I square up with him. I fight him. I end up, like, getting pounded on. And I'm, like, on the ground, like, just, you know, trying to kick this dude off me. And all of a sudden, this guy just goes limp. Like, just falls on top of me, like, limp. And I see my brother standing there with a 2x4, like a 4 foot 2x4. My brother, like, when the fight started, he took off running, you know, because I was like, dude, get out of here, you know. Yeah. So he took off running, found a 2x4, ran back, busted this dude over the head with it, knocks him out cold. And so we just both jumped on our bikes and, like, took off. So literally my first fight, like, my brother saved me from, like, getting pounded on.
I mean, the guy got knocked out, so
we won.
Some WWE stuff, you know?
Yeah, we won that fight.
And after that, I guess, was that really when you got your first taste of knowing what it's like to be in a fight? What made you want to kind of pursue that, especially growing up? I know you did, like, boxing a little bit. You wrestled.
Yeah.
What made you go down that path? Was your family always, like, pushing you towards that, or was it something you kind of just chose?
No. I was actually going to take over my family business. My parents owned a, like, small restoration business. And growing up, like, I was, like, you know, like, basically, like, groomed to take over that business, like, my whole life, you know. So, like, I went to, like, business school. I took, like, business classes. I like, worked for my dad, like, my whole life. I knew the ins and outs of that business, like, by the time I was 18. And then MMA kind of started getting big. So my senior year, I was going to go wrestle at a pretty big university. I got in a fight. Imagine that. At a wrestling tournament, I got thrown off my wrestling team. So I lost my scholarship, and then, my cousin was getting ready for, like, his, like, second or third, like, Golden Glove state title. So I basically went in the gym to, like, just, like, help him get ready, 'cause he didn't have a lot of training partners. And I had, like, a little bit of boxing experience, like, when I was, like, a little kid, like, we used to, like, you know, box around, but my parents really did not want me to fight. They didn't want me to box. And I started training with them, and, you know, they were like, you know, you should enter the gloves this year. Like, I think we think you could win it at whatever weight class. And I'm like, yeah, why not? Like, I'm in good shape. You know, I just got done with the wrestling season. So I fought in the gloves. I ended up winning a Golden Glove state title that same year. And, like, then my, like, fighting career was done. You know, I'm like, I'm the man. Like, I can box. You know, I'm a Golden Glove state champ. I wrestled. And then MMA kind of started to, like, blow up in my local area. And I went and watched a fight. And I saw all the guys that were fighting. And I was like, I could whoop these dudes. And I'm telling everybody, I'm like, I could whoop all these guys. And they were like, do it. So do it, you know? And I'm like, all right, I will. And that's literally how my MMA career started. Like, I didn't really intend on, like, becoming a fighter. I just, like, did it once, and it was more of, like, a bucket list thing. And then, you know, it went pretty well. And then I did it again. And then I just fell in love with the sport and, like, just took over my whole life. And, like, it's all I wanted to do.
That's pretty crazy. So you weren't even, like, I guess MMA wasn't as big as it is now, but you weren't even, like, watching it as a fan, following it?
No, not really. Not until I had maybe, like, 10, 15 amateur fights before I was, like, you know, like, started, like, watching it and studying it. And then I just got so obsessed with it. It's all I could think about. Like, I didn't care about, partying. I didn't care about women. I didn't care about anything. I wanted to train and get better at fighting. Like, it just took over my life. And that's really like kind of what it takes to be good at MMA anyways. But yeah, I mean, it was wild because, I mean, it was like maybe a year and a half. I fought like 10, almost 15 times, which is kind of unheard of nowadays. Like, people like don't do that. Like, I was fighting, brutal. I was treating it like wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, in a wrestling season, you might wrestle 50 times. So like, every opportunity I got to fight, I was like, I'm in, you know what I mean? Like, you want to fight this guy in 2 weeks? I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, let's do it. So like, it happened like really fast. I mean, I had 20 amateur fights in like just over 2 years.
Damn, that's crazy. Yeah. And most people fight like maybe twice.
Yeah.
A year. So
almost 10 times a year.
Yeah. You're like speed running through the amateurs. How big of a difference is it to have that actual fight experience versus getting the reps in the gym during training camp? Because I feel like there's no real substitute for really, you know, being in front of somebody. They're trying to take your head off. You're trying to take their head off. Like, you can spar and it can get pretty, you know, sparring can get pretty tough, but does it even really get close?
I mean, yeah, I mean, there's repetitions that you absolutely need in the gym. Like, if you want to be good at fighting, you know, you have to rep something so many times for it to become a second nature so that you will do it like in a live scenario, in a fight, you know? So like, when I first started fighting, like, I mean, I could go back and like whoop my own ass from, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, you know, just because I have so much more repetitions now than I did then. And I was actually talking with a couple Navy SEALs today. Like, we were shooting and they were like, you know, I'm like, is there any, like, you know, we're doing like shooting drills. I'm like, is there any of this that is like, that translates to like actual combat? And they're like, maybe like 1-2%. But like, until you've been in those scenarios, like, you don't really know how you're gonna,
how you're gonna react.
Yeah, how you're gonna react. I mean, that's the beauty of like a real competition in fighting, you know, is that like, you get in there, you see exactly like what you do right, what you do wrong, and then you kind of build on that. And I don't think there's any substitution. Like, I see so many guys, like young guys that are like 6-0 in their pro career, and they have, you know, 5 or 6 amateur fights. And I'm like, these guys still
they're
not very good yet. You know, you see it happen a lot. You have this like, this prospect that's, you know, 7-0, 8-0, and you're like, this guy's the next, he's it, you know what I mean? He's the man. And then he like goes to the UFC and he just gets drowned because like he doesn't have that adversity in those real scenarios yet. So he doesn't even know how he's going to react. You know what I mean? He's pretty much been a bully his entire career. He's just whooping everybody. And then he gets in there with like some hardened, you know, UFC veteran, and he just gets his ass whooped. And it's like, well, there's no substitute for that. Like, you don't know how you're going to react. Like, you know, when someone knocks you on your ass until you've been knocked on your ass, you know?
Speak about that a little bit, because I've seen a few of your other interviews where you talk about guys coming from other fight promotions coming to the UFC. How different is the talent pool in the UFC compared to other promotions?
Oh, I mean, there's a big difference. I think about like my like UFC career, and then like I think about before. I mean, before the UFC, you know, I knew for a fact that, you know, I was fighting guys that were like 8-4, and you know, they had good records. They had, you know, over 10 professional fights. And like some guys that, you know, I fought a dude that was like 8-1. You know, I fought some like really tough, like regional guys. And like on my worst night, like I whooped that guy like hands down. Like, he doesn't touch me. He doesn't hit me. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do anything to me. And I knew that like going into the fight. So I knew I could do whatever I wanted. And like, I went into the fight like wanting to work on something, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Until like eventually, like I'd get him out of there. You know what I mean? Like, I was trying to make like highlight reels. I wasn't even thinking that like there's any possibility that that guy could beat me. And then, you know, you go in the UFC, and like, for me, it was like, I was like fast tracked. You know, I fought like a really, you know, I think I was the number 2 guy in the US. He was the number 1 guy. I fought him my UFC debut. I beat him. And then, you know, I'm fighting like the number 1 prospect in all of MMA, like this French cat. And I'm like watching him fight, and I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to beat this dude, you know? And like, I'd never really been in a scenario like that, like where I was like, man, if I make this mistake, that mistake, like this dude's going to put me unconscious, you know, like in front of everyone I've ever met, you know? Yeah. So it's like a different level of pressure. And then like, the longer you're in the UFC, there's more eyes on you. There's more pressure. There's more money, you know? So you're fighting for a lot of different things. And, you know, the pressure is, It's crazy. It's crazy. Because, I mean, every time you get in there, you're fighting for your life.
How was that switch going from, like, you practicing going to a fight saying, like, hey, I know this guy's not going to beat me. I want to work on XYZ relative to going to the UFC where you're like, hey, this guy I beat. Don't know how I'm going to beat this next dude. Four fights later, I'm about to go fight against Marab, who's 6'1". How does, like, all that translate when you're fighting these huge prospects, knowing that you yourself is a good prospect?
Yeah, I mean, that's, like you said it, like, you just kind of got to think that, like, you're the prospect, you know what I mean? And, like, and I fought, you know, Song Yadong and, like, Tom Dukin while I fought my second UFC fight. And, like, that was, like, the first time I think I'd ever, like, gone into a fight and been, like, you know, I think everyone has counted me out of this fight. You know, everybody already, like, picked this dude to win. And that was, like, a super unfamiliar feeling to me. And in a lot of ways, like, at some point, you kind of start believing the people. Because they're like, man, you know, like, I'm getting interviewed. And they're like, man, this is a really tough, you know, draw for your second UFC fight. And I'm, like, sitting here like, that's a tough draw for him, too. Like, exactly. I'm a bad dude. Like, right. What are you talking about? You know, like, so I think, like, if you don't have that chip on your shoulder and you don't, like, you know, just be like, F you to all the people that are, you know, kind of like counting you out, you know, it can get to you. And I can say personally that, like, a lot of times, you know, I think of fights that I lost, and I think a lot of times, like, I let, you know, other people's hype, like, convince me that that guy was better than he actually was. Mm-hmm. Like, Song Yadong's a great example of that. I talked to a bunch of people that train with him, have trained with him, and they're like, dude, listen, like, this dude's knocked out everyone in the gym. And, like, at Team Alpha Male, like, there's a lot of studs in there. Oh, like, yeah. They're like, this guy hits you. They're like, be careful. Like, this dude hits you, like, you're going to sleep. And so I'm, like, going into this fight, and, like, I'm just coming off, like, a major, like shoulder injury. And they called me, like, pretty much right at 8 weeks. And, like, do you want to fight Song Yadong? And I'm like, yo, not really. And they're like, well, we'll give you a new contract if you do. And I'm like, well, money talks. Let's do it, you know? So, and, like, I just remember thinking, like, all the way leading up to that fight, just being like, you know, I don't really know how I'm going to beat this dude, because, like, I heard that, like, his wrestling is really good. I heard that, you know, he hits like an absolute truck. He's crazy fast, crazy athletic, crazy strong, like, all this stuff. And it wasn't until, like, I took him down the first time that I'm like, what?
That's it?
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like, I took him down, and, like, I just took a shot, and, like, he's on his ass. And I'm like, oh, wait, like, well, I can beat this dude. You know what I mean? And I realized that, like, a couple minutes into the fight, I'm like, man, yeah, he's fast and he does hit really hard, but, like,
so do I.
Yeah, so do I. Like, I, you know, I smoked him with, like, a big overhand and, like, looked at him and, like, you know, it hurt him, and I knew it. And I was like, okay, well, he can hurt me, but I can hurt him too. And that was like it was kind of a weird moment where I was like, this guy was a monster in my mind for months. You know what I mean? Like, this guy scared the crap out of me. Like, every day I'm like, can't believe I got to fight this dude. And then I get in there with him and I'm like, well, I can't believe, like, I was this scared of this guy. You know what I mean? And that's, like, just one of those things that you don't really realize until you're, like, in those scenarios, like how you're going to react and, like, what your mentality is going to be.
And besides people talking in your ear, sort of building other people up, obviously the UFC has, like, a huge spotlight on it. It's the biggest promotion, and for a reason, you know, the talent is there. But not just the media, everybody, all the fans watching, everybody has an opinion, right? How difficult is it to zone that out? Because I know, you know, everybody loves to jump on social media and bash people and say this and that, not knowing that, like, behind the scenes, fighters are fighting through injury. They're fighting through, like, you know, just brutal sparring sessions, life. Brutal training sessions, life, brutal weight cuts. And then you go out there and, you know, for whatever reason, sometimes you don't get the job done and everybody seems to have an opinion. Everybody seems to just talk out of their ass. How difficult is it to zone that out?
I think that's the one thing that, like, I could never be prepared for, like, when it came to, like, getting in the UFC. You know, I could work, you know, until I was absolutely exhausted. I could, you know, do whatever I had to do to make weight. I could, you know, put up with all the media and all the, you know, other stuff that comes with, like, fight weeks and, you know, the pressure of actually fighting. But the one thing that I, like, really, really struggled with throughout my UFC career was, like, the naysayers and, like, what people said about me. You know, it didn't matter if I won or I lost. You know, if I won, they were like, you know, that was a crappy fight, you know, or, like, you know, you should have done X, Y, and Z. And I'm, like, sitting here, like, just wanting to pull my hair out, like, you should get in there and then see what you can do, you know? or like you lose and everyone's like, oh, I knew you were going to lose. Like, you're a bum. You know, they say all this crazy stuff about you. And it's like, it's so hard not to take that stuff to heart, you know? And if there's one thing I feel like I really did wrong in my career, it's like, I let those people get to me, you know? I really did, like, you know, some guy like messages me like, you know, some crazy stuff. And I'm like, I'm immediately pissed off and I'm messaging him back like, fuck you, dude. You know what I mean? Like, I'm on my phone and I'm getting all riled up. And like, I'm like sitting, you know, I can think of a time like I was sitting with my whole family. We were at the beach. We were having a great time. And like, this dude messaged me. And next thing I know, I'm like sweating. My face is red. And my mom is like, what's going on? And I'm like, this little dork online is like talking shit to me. Like, I'm telling him, what's up, mom? And she's like, why? You know, and I'm like, and then I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, I don't really know why. But like, that's one thing that I really, really struggled with was like all the little dorks, you know, sitting in their armchairs, just like talking shit about me. I'm like, dude, you have any idea what kind of hell I had to go through just to be here? You know, like, I mean, I went through, you know, 7-8 years of like injury, like fighting back from injuries and like, you know, like not getting fights and, you know, like fighting for free. And like, you know what I mean? I did so much just to make it to the UFC. You know, you think that like there's like a level of respect that people are going to give you. And the reality is that like the better you get at the sport, the more people shit on you. That's just how it is.
Yeah. And I think that's the unfortunate part is, you know, when it is that difficult, the longer you're in and the better you are, the more people are talking. So,
yeah.
But speak a little bit about the journey to get there. What are some of the worst injuries that you had to battle through? Obviously, you had that nasty shoulder injury. I believe a knee injury as well. Oh, yeah. What were some of the worst injuries you had to go through in your career?
So, I mean, I tore both ACLs, like one fixed, and then I literally don't have an ACL on my right knee. I haven't had one for forever. I was actually warming up for a UFC fight and I tore my meniscus. So like my knee like locked up. So I literally like had to like flex it to get it unlocked, which is a crazy story in itself. But like, you know, broken hands, broken nose, you know, getting my teeth knocked out. It's just like a combination of like all these little injuries. And it's just like, you know, it might only take you like, you know, sprained ankle, torn MCL, like I've torn my knees apart, my hips, like every single, and like you can recover from all that stuff, but it's like the mental toll that takes on you, you know, because like you've put all your eggs in this one basket, right? Like you've literally like been like, okay, you know, I could have taken over the family business and like probably been really successful at that. But like I decided to like chase this dream with no guarantee that anything good was going to come out of it. And like, I put all my eggs in this basket and then I get hurt. And it's like, okay, now what do I do? You know what I mean? Because like my only real, you know, dream in life was to like, you know, be a UFC fighter. So I'm like sitting here and I'm like, man, like, is this the injury that takes me out after, you know, 6 years of hard work? And, you know, I got to a point where, I fought and I won like a really, really tough fight against this Russian cat who was just an absolute stud. And it was like, he was like my fight to get into the UFC. He's like the guy I had to beat. And his name is Farkad Sharipov. He was like a Dagestani guy, super scary, super nice guy, but so scary. Like I was terrified of this guy. And I beat him in my hometown, which is, you know, nerve-wracking enough. And like with like 10 seconds left, he threw an axe kick and I like just pulled away and my knee slipped on the cage and I like shredded my knee. 10 seconds left in the fight. I tear my ACL. MCL, meniscus, like my knee is like gone, right? Damn. And I made pretty good money that fight, but I'm like literally looking at it like reconstructive surgery is, you know, it's pretty expensive. Oh, I don't have good health insurance. I have like, you know, like a major medical policy. And like, so I'm literally going to take all the money I just made, which it's money I need to, you know, survive.
Right.
Or like, do I just like accept defeat and be like, okay, like, I'm good enough to fight in the UFC, but like my body's just not holding up. You know what I mean? And I was kind of like on the fence about the surgery and like, I was just wearing a knee brace and, you know, I went back to work, you know, working for my dad, you know, teaching personals like with a knee brace on. And then like, there was another opportunity to fight. And I was like, well, my knee is like completely destroyed, but maybe I can do like enough rehab that I can get my knee like just good enough that I can like go beat this guy because I feel like he's not a wrestler. Maybe I can just outbox him. You know what I mean? And like, you don't really need your knee for boxing. Like I talked myself into this. I'm like, I'll be fine. And I went and fought him and like dropped him like twice in the first round, a couple times in the second round, and then finally finished him. And like with my like my bad knee, and I'm like, well, crap, like I didn't even think about my knee in that fight. And I was just like, maybe I can do this like without my knee. You know what I mean? With, like, just like let it rock. And I did, you know what I mean? And I won a few more fights, and then I was in the UFC and I fought, you know, 15 fights, 8 years in the UFC with like no ligaments in my knee.
That's an insane.
Just because it was like, because I was just in a, like a scenario where like I had to, you know, I had to do that, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, you dedicate your whole life to this. It's your biggest dream. Yeah. And I guess it's like, you have no other choice.
Yeah. And like, I thought I was like this, like the only guy that ever went through that stuff. And then I realized like, there's a bunch of guys in the UFC that like have had similar injuries to me. Like Justin Gaethje's one of them. Like he doesn't have ACL in his knees. Damn. He's like got no ACLs. And I think he blew his knee out, like doing a backflip off the cage.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. Damn, yeah, it's crazy.
No, but that's actually insane to think about, because a lot of people in that moment, they might just give up. They might just say, you know what, I'd rather just keep my health.
Couple of losses.
And then just move on. But then you're like, okay, I want to push forward. This is what I've always wanted to do. And you did it successfully.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing is like you talk about health, like, dude, clearly, like, we're professional fighters. We do not care about our health. You know what I mean? Like, like that's, we're, I mean, we're all going to be, like, completely mangled when it's all over. Hopefully science catches up and we can, you know, take some drugs, you know, like.
Super soldier.
Yeah, like Cowboy Cerrone.
I wonder, do you just, like, sometimes, like, maybe sit down and you're just like, I'm in pain? Like.
No. Honestly, like, that's the thing is, like, I feel like. Because being a professional athlete, like, you really do have to take super good care of your body. Of course, like, eat healthy. Like, you know, I think about, like, when I was young and, you know, before fighting, before I was an athlete, like, I was partying. I was eating whatever I wanted. You know, I was just being reckless. And then, like, when I became an athlete and got serious about being an athlete, like, I, like, took a nutrition course. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I got certified as a personal trainer because I was, like, because I wanted to know, like, how to heal myself, you know? And like one of the main reasons I moved to Las Vegas was because of the UFC Performance Institute, because they have like, you know, the best physical therapists and like athlete nutrition, like all that stuff. And I wanted to learn from these people and like learn how to take care of myself so that I like, you know, when fighting was over, like I wasn't like a crippled, you know, young man. And honestly, like I think about like other people that, you know, I went to school with or that are my age, and I'm like, you know, I might have done horrendous things to my body, but I'm still so much more capable than they are because like I understand how to like rehab myself, and you know what I mean? And I've kept my body in good shape like throughout my whole life. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's going to come a day when like, you know, getting off this couch is hard, but like, I feel like I don't know a whole lot of old men that like can move really well at the same time.
Yeah,
you know?
That's so fair. It's like, yeah.
It's going to go eventually.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. I mean, eventually, I mean, I'm going to be mangled, but I feel like all of us are. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but speaking of the PI, you've spoken about this in a few of your other interviews. Making weight has always been one of the biggest issues for you.
Yeah.
And you always say you get paid to make weight, you don't get paid to fight.
Yeah.
How has the PI really made that simpler for you? Because I've seen some of their work with a bunch of other fighters, a bunch of them talk about how efficient and effective they are. So how big of a help have they been for helping you cut weight efficiently?
So it's just like they use science. And like their education and the technology that they have at their disposal to like figure out exactly how many calories you're burning. You know, they put nutrition plans together for the athletes. They do everything, you know, and like the UFC PI, if there's one thing I'll miss about the UFC, it's the UFC PI and like the staff there, because, you know, like through battling injuries and like being there every day, like I really got to know those people and I really care about them. And they really care about the athletes, and they like go above and beyond, you know, like they could do the bare minimum and it would show, but they are really like, they love what they're doing the same way that we love fighting, you know? And, like that group of people, like between the nutritionists, the, you know, strength conditioning people, the physical therapists, like everyone there, like they all work together, and they really care about the athletes, and they really care about like actually like keeping us healthy. And, you know, you go from like having like no support in terms of like, you know, your strength conditioning and your diet, and you're just kind of guessing or you're learning from somebody that also has no idea what they're doing.
I feel like you do like all the old school stuff where it's like, you know, you throw some eggs and some nails in a blender and then drink it, you know, type of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I like literally, or you just don't eat for like 2 weeks, you know, like doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And then you like start to do it by like science, like, and you know, like it's just, it's next level, and they are next level, and they are really, really, they're really, really great at what they do, you know. And there's a reason that so many other athletes, you know, people in the NFL, NBA, and all these other sports, like hot professional hockey, baseball players, like all these people come to the UFCPI because mm-hmm. like the people at the UFCPI are literally the best. And like other athletes are starting to catch on, and like there's a ton of like really big name athletes that come in and out of the PI.
Are there any misconceptions that at the UFCPI they kind of like broke, I guess, that where you thought like, oh, it's this way, and then they told you it was another way?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The big one is like keto. Like, so like my thing, I would always basically like cut carbs. So like my entire fight camp, I wouldn't eat any carbs. You know, I'd be eating like eggs and avocados and like little piece of steak and like veggies, you know, like, and you know, they like did all the, they do what's called a DEXA scan, and they hook you up to this mask, and they do all this crazy, I don't even understand a lot of the science behind it, but they see your exact body composition, you know, how much fat, how much muscle you have, you know, how your, what your body burns at what heart rate. You know, so like if you burn sugar, you burn fat, they figure all this stuff out, and they basically punch this diet in for you. And the diet they had me on was like kind of a high carb diet, like a mm-hmm. high carb, low fat diet. And I'm like, no, I'm not eating carbs. You know what I mean? Like, I don't eat carbs. Like, that's not my thing. They're right, like, well, right. Just try it. And I did it, and I've never felt better in my life. And I'm like, how have I been doing this for 10 years?
The opposite way.
Yeah, and like that complete opposite way. And like, I've literally just been like killing my performances. And like, they came in and switched everything around. So like, that's one big thing is like, carbs aren't the enemy, you know, for athletes. Like, athletes really need carbs. And that's just like one common misconception, because everyone thinks it's like, okay, I have to lose weight. So, all right, well, I guess I'm not eating any bread, you know what I mean? Or I got to cut the rice, or I got to cut this. When really, like, if you want to lose, you know, and you're an athlete and you're burning those carbohydrates, like, you really want to cut fat, because that's ultimately what you're trying to lose.
That's kind of insane, but I guess it makes sense that the best scientists in the world that study that stuff have the best test subjects, which are you guys.
Yeah, who, yeah.
You know, you have to cut weight, because I understand, I guess, like, NBA, NFL, it's good to, you know, for energy levels, for mm-hmm. performance, but in terms of performance plus energy levels plus having to just shred a bunch of weight, mm-hmm. there's nobody really better to work with than professional fighters.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because we're not like endurance athletes, you know, we're endurance athletes, but we also need to be able to perform like, you know, crazy stunts. You know, we need to, like, our heart rate's going all over the place. Yeah, so we're like a combination of, you know, basically every other sport, to where, you know, somebody that runs triathlons, it's like what they eat and what they do is way different than what we would do. But yeah, I mean, I feel like the UFC PI has, you know, maybe even gotten better since, you know, I've known them, just because they've had so much data to collect on us. And, you know, there is like a ton of science when it comes to weight cutting and the diets and all that stuff, but it's also, you know, there's a ton of discipline that comes with that. And that's one part that, you know, maybe the hardest part of fighting is like the discipline. Like, you not only do you have to like go train super hard, you know, 3 times a day, 2 times a day, like day in and day out, but you also have to be on this crazy strict diet, and like your body is begging you for more calories. You know what I mean? So like a lot of times I would come into a fight camp at like 170 pounds. Like, damn. That's normally what I would weigh to make 136. And then I would lose, you know, 10 pounds of fat, which is about all I could lose, and normally about 5 pounds of muscle. And I would get down to, you know, between like 150 and 155. Like, that was like the range where I felt comfortable. And then from there, it's just guts, you know, like then you're just sweating it out. And like, that's part of fighting that nobody sees, you know, like, Islam Makhachev, one of the biggest 155 pounders I've ever seen in my life. And like, I've been told that like he cuts weight, he cuts it all at once, and he'll cut like 25 pounds, and he cuts it like from Thursday night all the way till Friday morning. So it's like an all night experience, you know? So this dude's not sleeping, you know, the night before he weighs in. He's literally, all he's doing is like riding with a sauna suit on and a sweatshirt and a bunch of clothes, riding a bike for hours, you know what I mean? You're talking about massive amounts of weight, and like, everything in your body is telling you to stop. You know what I mean? Because you're literally like dehydrating your body, like just before like you're gonna die.
Yeah.
Pretty
yeah.
much. You know what I mean? And like that experience alone is like maybe one of the physically and mentally toughest things I've ever done. You know, like so like I mean now like every now and again, like my wife will be like, "Did you eat today?" And I'll be like, "I don't remember." You know what I mean? Like because I don't, you know what I mean? I don't even, you know, I've gone to like such like crazy, desperate place of, you know, I've gone to like the depths of hell, you know, in terms of like what I'm capable of doing with my body that like, I don't even really think about that kind of stuff anymore before. Like, you know, it's been like a full day or a day and a half. And I'm like, oh man, I need to eat something, you know, or like, oh, I don't think I worked out twice today and I don't think I drank any water today. You know, just because like I don't even think about it anymore. You just like put it out of your mind.
What's been your most difficult weight cut?
I would say probably this last one. You know, my last fight in the UFC. And it wasn't the weight cut. Everything went really smooth. I lost a ton of weight super fast. Yeah, I went into the fight with like a little bit of a rib injury, so I kind of had to do all kinds of other stuff to kind of supplement my training, which was, you know, which is always hard. But I got staff. Like on Thursday, yeah, like just a little, like I was cutting weight actually, and I had like an ingrown hair on my back, and I was like in the middle of the weight cut, and it was like itching me, and I scratched it, and you know what I mean, like all the sweat and stuff like got in that thing, got infected, and so like that was brutal because I like not only was I almost at weight, but I was like starting to get like fever and chills, you know, from the staff, and like in hindsight, I probably should have just pulled out because I was in rough shape. And like trying to rehydrate, you know, when you're like, your body's like fighting an infection is brutal, you know, cause you're like, you're at a point where like, you know, I'm 24 hours before I'm going to fight. Like I can't just like get on antibiotics and think it's going to go away. You know what I mean? Like that stuff takes a little while to kick in. But I mean, that was brutal. I was like, you know, like the night before the fight, I was like, woke up just like sweating, like, you know, all the water that I just put back in my body and I was just feeling awful. But yeah, I mean, that was pretty brutal. That was pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't think any other sport has something as brutal as the weight cuts. And I've seen like a few of the documentaries of fighters making weight. And you're right. It's just, you literally look like a zombie.
Yeah.
You look like you just got up out of a grave and stood up. Like you just, everything is gone. Like you could look at fighters' faces and like there's no life in the face anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen guys and I've, me included, like I've seen guys that like are being carried, you know, like there's a curtain. Right before you walk out, you get on the scale. Like I've seen guys, like 2-3 people like carrying them to that point. And then they're like, okay, like muster up everything you got. And like, you have to like get your shit together for 30 seconds so you can get on the scale, get off and get some water. And like, I've seen guys go like literally, you know, at regional shows, like guys go straight to the hospital. And I can think of like at one regional show, like there was a kind of a dispute over the weight and I was already half dead. And like I had sold, you know, like 500 tickets. So I was going to make like probably more money than I ever made fighting before. And I weighed in at 138, which was like contractually like what I was supposed to make. And my opponent was like, I won't fight unless he makes 37. So like, I'm already half dead. And like, he's straight up saying that he's not going to fight unless I make 137. So I had to go like, cause I'm already thinking like
you're done
5 minutes away from like drinking water, which is all I can think about at this point. And I'm like, you know, half dead. And like, I had to go back and go get in a sauna and lose that next pound. And like, that was like, that like put me over the edge. And like, I had a family friend who was a nurse and like, she immediately, like she came to the venue, stuck me with an IV bag back when IV bags were legal and like stuck me with an IV bag. And like, had I not had that IV bag, like, you know, I was having like kidney, like liver failure. Like I was in rough shape. Like she like literally saved my life. And like, I've seen that like more times than I care to admit, you know, that's a really nasty part about the sport. And it's like, everyone has like some kind of solution to it. It's like, no, there's no solution, you know, like because you're talking about like life-changing amounts of money, you know, like guys are going to cut weight and they're going to cut absolutely as much as they can, you know, and still perform on the next day.
Yeah, that's absolutely brutal. But I'm guessing, you know, being in those environments, being around a bunch of people that do the same thing to their body, like push their body to the absolute limit, I'm sure MMA has also given you like a bunch of brothers, a bunch of really close friends. Who are some of like the closest people that you've gotten from MMA?
You know, so like the guys I came up with in Michigan, I would say are like still to this day, just because I've, you know what I mean? From being like dumb kids with like a dream of making it in MMA to, you know, like me eventually getting in the UFC, like those guys, you know, like I've been in all their weddings. Like we're best friends. I could not talk to them for, you know, 3-4 months. Like one person that comes to mind is like Darren Cruikshank. Like we're past the point of like being like good friends, you know what I mean? Like he's like a big brother to me and he always will be, you know, no matter like how long we go, you know, between like speaking to each other or, you know, if there's events in his life that I miss, you know what I mean? Like there's just like, there's a bond that him and I created, you know, through like combat, you know, cause like when he was getting ready for all his UFC fights and I was like still on the regional scene, like I was like his main training partner, you know? So like me and that dude have been to war more times than, you know, my brain cares to admit. So it's like the relationships that you make in MMA and then, you know, all the guys in Vegas too, you know, I'm starting to get to a point where, you know, like these guys are like, you know, becoming like brothers too, because, you know, like Patchy Mix, for example, like Patchy Mix and I have sparred 100 times. And like this morning, for whatever reason, you know, he's got a big fight coming up. Like He just got signed with the UFC.
Shout out to Patchy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Congrats. He's needed to be there for a really long time, but like, for whatever reason, like him and I, not in like a F you kind of way, more in like a, like, I know you have a fight coming up and I'm going to get, I'm going to do everything I can to get you ready. Like, I mean, you can see, I got some, like a couple black eyes, like him and I just like
went at it.
We had like a 5-round war this morning. Damn. Like we just beat the living crap out of each other. And it, like you say, it doesn't come from a place of
like hate or anger.
It literally comes from a place of love. You know what I mean? Absolutely. Like we can literally beat the crap out of each other and like hug and kiss each other afterwards. You know what I mean? It's not what everybody thinks. Everybody thinks that like we're like these like untamed beasts that just like are ready to like fight people at the gas station. It's not like that. I mean, fighting is a strange thing where, you know, like, you know, the guys that you're like going to war with like every day become like your closest friends because like they understand the struggle that you're going through like in the fight game. Cause it's a brutal sport, man. It's, you know, not always the best guy that wins. It's just the guy that has a good night. And, you know, it's like, what can you do under the lights? Because there's been, you know, people ask me, like, who do you think is going to win this fight? And I'm like, well, technically, this guy is probably better. You know what I mean? But at the same time, like, I got no idea. Like, I don't know what this guy's going through, like, in his head. You know, I don't know, like, what kind of injuries this guy's dealing with. And, like, and this other guy might just have the night of his life, you know? Because, the distance between the, you know, the 50th best guy and the 5th best guy in the world is not as big as you think. You know, like both those dudes are absolute hardened killers. So either one of those guys can win a fight if they just have like a good night, good training camp, you know, things go the way they should. It's crazy. Like some guys, like a great example, Merab. Merab, like yeah. I trained with him before that fight. Like we trained a little bit together, you know, like a lot of my training partners train with him and like, they're basically like, dude, you're going to kill this guy. You know, and I kind of had seen him like in the gym and I'm like, man, this dude doesn't look very good. Like, I think I'm going to whoop him too, you know? And then I get in the cage with him and like, he's like the most frustrating person I've ever fought. Like he has a game plan. He sticks to it like to a T. He's actually super, super smart. You know what I mean? Like things that I could do to him in the first round, I couldn't do to him in the second round. Like he made so many adjustments, like in terms of like fight IQ, and that's one thing I feel like people don't talk about. Like his fight IQ is incredible. You know what I mean? Like look at the way he fought Sean O'Malley. He never let Sean O'Malley like open up and throw a combination. And it made Sean O'Malley look terrible, but like every time Sean O'Malley went to like hit him, Merab just ran away, shot. You know? And like Sean, like every single time, it's like Merab knew exactly when Sean was gonna overextend himself and boom, he was on his legs. And it was incredible, like, as a fighter watching that fight, because I'm like, I literally just watched, because, I mean, honestly, if we're looking at those two guys on paper, like, Sean O'Malley is way better than Merab.
Way better, yeah.
Like, straight up. Like,
yeah,
he's
bag is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, dude, like, he made Chito Vera look like a pinata, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
that was bad.
It was sweet. It was sweet. It was like, I'm, like, watching this dude fight, and I'm like, damn, this dude is good.
Yeah.
You know? And then, you know, I'm like, he's so much better than Merab, and then you go see Merab, like, go just like run a takedown clinic on this dude and like just dog walk him.
Merab's kissing his back and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, literally, like he's whooping him. He's not even like he's effortlessly whooping him. And it's just like he just had the perfect game plan and he executed it like perfectly. So, I mean, there's so many like, there's so many variables and there's so many factors that go into like what makes a fighter good and like what you have to do to be successful. It's not like the most talented guy or the hardest working guy. There's so many other things, you know what I mean? There's so many uncontrollables in fighting that are just, that's really what makes the sport so scary as an athlete, but also like, it's the greatest thrill of your life, you know, like fighting is, it's awesome.
How frustrating is it? Because you only get 3 minutes, or you get a very short amount of time, you know, every round you go out there, you're trying to see what they're throwing at you. You're trying to see what their game plan is because sometimes they switch it up from their last fight. Sometimes they're fighting completely different.
Yeah.
How frustrating is it to only get that small window of time and then you got to go back and then come back out and they might switch something again and you're like you, it feels like you can't just pin them down and do what you want to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think that's like literally what separates, you know, the greatest fighters from, you know, the like really, really talented good guys. You know what I mean? Because I mean, I look at like my career, like I had every single talent, like God given talent. You know, I have a lot more than most people, you know, and like in terms of work ethic, like I don't know a lot of guys that like are out in the gym, like outworking me, you know what I mean? So like I had everything that you need to be a UFC champion, but like in the cage, you know, I basically got outsmarted or I made a mistake and someone capitalized on it, you know? So it's really, I mean, there's a fair amount of luck involved, but also, you know, like, can you make those in-fight adjustments? Like, you know, if somebody hits you with something, can you make the adjustment so that you don't get hit with that again? You know, and I feel like that's something I did really, really well in the beginning of my career, but towards the end of my career, I feel like, you know, it's something that I haven't done. So it's like something I've been really like trying to like stress, you know, going into this last leg of my career, like, all right, let's not go out there and have like a tough man contest with this dude. Like, let's be a little bit more cerebral. And like, I always think about like that Merab fight. Cause I'm like, literally like I was just as good of a wrestler. I was a better striker, probably stronger and more athletic, like faster. But like that dude straight up outsmarted me and outworked me. Like, and like those, you know what I mean? Obviously like his pace is like insane,
crazy,
you know, but like I beat him in the third round. Like I was in good enough shape to win that fight, but like straight up that dude outsmarted me. And that's like, kudos to him because, you know, I feel like I'm pretty smart in MMA, but he was making adjustments like before I was, you know, he was making the adjustments, you know, immediately. And like to where like, it was taking me a little bit longer to make the adjustments I needed to make. And like, that's just like one of those like X factors of MMA that maybe like the casual fan doesn't necessarily see, you know. And I like watch, like if you watch, like a great example was like Volkanovski, like Volkanovski, I think is one of the absolute like smartest fighters out there. Like you watch his fights with Max Holloway, you know, his first fight with Max Holloway, super close, probably could have went either way. Like I actually kind of thought Max won the fight, but also, you know, could have went either way. You know, I don't think they got it wrong, but it was really, really close fight. The next fight, Max or Volkanovski says he doesn't fight well, but like the gap is getting bigger, you know. And then the third fight, it's like the gap has gotten so much bigger, and it's like that's that you get two athletes that are, you know, the absolute cream of the crop, best fighters in the world. And then you have one athlete who is making adjustments like on the fly as the fight's happening. And he's finding something that works and he's just using it. And then he's switching it up and using it again. And that's kind of like part of the fight game that I kind of like nerd out on, because it's amazing to see like kind of the in-fight adjustments like that guys make, like Volkanovski and like in that like trilogy, like how much better he got. And like Max was still fighting the same fight he fought, you know, that first round, you know, their first fight. And like Volkanovski like evolved, you know, in those 15 rounds that they competed against each other, you know. So it's just like, that's just one kind of intangible that's like really incredible, you know, with certain athletes like Volkanovski.
Who were some of your other favorite fighters to watch?
Oh, geez. I like Corey Sandhagen. I really love watching Corey Sandhagen fight just because, you know, he's so dynamic and he's doing, you know, this guy's like in the Matrix sometimes, you know. Sometimes he just like, he sees stuff before it happens, you know. And he is a super intelligent fighter. He finds ways to beat just about everybody. Another one, Peter Yan, I really like watching Peter Yan. And And then, you know, the 45ers, I really like watching. I really like Ilia Topuria. I think he's a beast. I think everybody kind of has mixed feelings about him, but like the reality is just like, you know, not only does he like have like rocks in his hands, but he's also, you know, and he's probably the best boxer I've ever seen put MMA gloves on, you know.
Wow. Better than Max.
Oh, I mean, yeah, way better. Oh, wow. Yeah, way better. Like in terms of like straight, in terms of straight boxing, like if those guys boxed anyone in that division, he would knock them all out, like straight up, like really? In within like three rounds, I think.
Yeah.
Know, like a, straight up, like, yeah, he's like a, he's like a elite level boxer competing in MMA. You know, he's just barely getting out of the way of stuff, you know, and like he's incredible, like really, really incredible boxer.
You think, how do you think he's going to size up against Makhachev? They do make it happen.
I mean, I don't necessarily think that fight's going to happen, but I think if he fights Charles Oliveira, I think he'll knock him out.
Yeah.
Straight up. Because, I mean, Charles was a 45 pounder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not like Islam. I don't know, man. That's a, like you're talking about two different sized human beings because Ilia Topuria is my size. Islam is your size.
Yeah,
like,
Islam's big 155.
Huge. Like he walked by me and I was like, oh my goodness. He's like, he's not like, not only is he like 5'10, 5'11, but he's like a big dude.
Yeah, I've seen him in person once and I was like, on TV, you know, he doesn't look big. And I guess it's, you know, you're watching these guys when they're at their smallest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you see him in person, I mean, outside, like, of camp. And
when I saw him, he looked like he was like 200 pounds. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's like a big, big dude. Yeah, I mean, it was incredible to me. I'm like, dude, I can't imagine. Like, I think I cut a ton of weight. Like, I know that guy cuts a ton of weight.
Yeah.
Like, he's hurting when he gets on that scale.
Obviously, you're transitioning out of the UFC now. But in the short term, do you have any plans to be in the octagon again anytime soon?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've gotten a ton of fight offers, you know, outside the UFC. Nothing that... thing is like, I've been doing this for so long and, you know... like I did do pretty well financially in the UFC. So like, I'm not like strapped for money. You know what I mean? I don't need to go like
fight for
freaking $5,000 on the regional scene. Like I don't need to do that. So, you know, for me, like it's gotta be the right time, right opponent, right opportunity, and the right amount of money. Like really, you know, like my only goal, like moving forward is to make money. I mean, really my only goal, like, I wanted to be a UFC fighter, and I wanted to fight against the best guys in the world. Like, I did that. And then, you know, like, fighting became a business for me. So, like, and I'm not going to sell my soul on social media and, like, be an asshole. Like, I just don't have that.
We can make it happen right now.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
Let's find out.
But, yeah. Oh, I've got plenty to say. Just keep to myself. So, it's like, you know, like I'll continue to, like, make money on, like, good investments, you know, and if like a great opportunity doesn't come up for fighting, you know, I guess it doesn't happen, you know what I mean? But I think it will, you know what I mean? I feel like there's plenty of big promotions that, you know, I can definitely add value to. So, you know, I think PFL, they're Risen, you know, I have a good connection with those guys over there. Yeah, I mean, I'll fight a few more times and then, you know, hang it up and be happy that I did it. But and then I'll get on TRT and be fucking jacked.
Are you going to miss fighting once it's all said and done? Is it something that is going to leave like a big gap in your life? Is it something that you're going to try to fill with something else? Like, how do you feel about that?
Oh my gosh. You know, I've watched, you know, some of my really good friends retire from the sport, you know, good, bad. I don't want to say any names, but I've seen people take it really well and just kind of like easily transition to like the next phase of life and like be happy that they fought. And I've seen people take it really, really bad. And I don't want to say like how it's going to be for me, because again, I haven't been in that situation. So like, I mean, like I would like to think that, you know, I'll just be happy that I fought and like, you know, be thankful for all the opportunities that I got and, I'll move on. But, you know, fighting is something that it just takes your entire life and simplifies it into like the only thing you have to do, the only thing you need to think about for the next 2 months is like beating this guy, you know, and it kind of like washes away all the like everyday problems in life. And that's like really, really the beauty of fighting. And then like the camaraderie, you know, with like hanging out with your boys at the gym. Absolutely. Like I said, I just went and shot with some Navy SEALs, and that was kind of their thing. Like they're both, you know, out of the SEAL teams, but they were like, you know, these are like combat hardened dudes. And like, they were like, that's, if there's one thing that I really miss, they're like, I don't necessarily miss, you know, like going into combat and not being sure if I'm going to come back, but they're like, I miss hanging out with my boys and training with my boys. So, you know, I don't think I can make a clean break from MMA. I think I'll always, you know, like love fighting and like be in the gym, just for my sanity. But, you know, hopefully I can, you know, walk away from the sport and not like, you know, completely lose my mind like I've seen some guys do. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like I'm still in the game. So, you know, like when the curtains close for the final time, I don't know how I'm going to feel. Hopefully I can just be thankful, but. Who knows, man? I might be beating people up outside this place. Who knows?
I think the most important part is just feeling like you left everything there. Yeah. I feel like the one thing that would make it even more difficult is feeling like you still have something left, but you just can't do it anymore. Whether it's just, you know, your body just can't go through camps anymore or something like that. But you know, you made it to the top of the top. You've competed against the best, and I think, you know, it's not bad from that kid. In Michigan, getting his bike stolen and his brother beaten.
Well, that's 2x4.
A 2x4, you know? It's like, who would have thought?
Not bad for a little hillbilly from a small town.
There you go.
Yeah, man. But it's just, you know, like, it's all perspective, you know? Like, when you're in it, like, you know, I don't think that's one thing. If I could give, like, advice to, like, a younger athlete, it's, like, really, like, you know, celebrate everything. You know, celebrate every single time, like, you compete. Celebrate, you know, the wins, the losses, like celebrate absolutely everything, every single accomplishment in the sport, because, you know, like I look back and I think, you know, every single time I won a fight, there was like a night or two nights where I was like happy, elated, but then it was always like, okay, who's next? Mm. You know what I mean? Like I never really, you know, it definitely like helped my success, you know, when I was younger, but like when I got in the UFC, you know, it kind of like compiled like stress on me too, because I was always, you know, like win or loss, I was like, okay, who are we fighting next? You know, instead of just being like, I'm pretty proud of like how hard I worked in this camp and how much discipline I had, or, you know, my performance or whatever it was, you know, there's always like, you're always just like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? When really like you should kind of relax a little bit and kind of enjoy the process and just be thankful for, you know, every day you get to spend, you know, in the gym, like healthy.
And I think that's something you can probably pass down to the next generation, because when you were coming up, there really weren't any vets to teach you the ropes, right? Yeah, it was such like a new sport. It was just a completely new industry that nobody was passing that game down to you guys. But now, having walked that line for so long, you know, the guys coming up under you, I'm sure, are just like soaking up all the knowledge and all the experience you're passing down to them.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been fortunate, like living in Vegas, you know, there's obviously like a ton of like UFC legends that live here and are in and out of the gym. And like, I've kind of seen like, you know, the composure that they have, like, you know, in their life, like post fighting, and, you know, I'm trying to like do what they do. You know what I mean? Like, and one of the things is like, you don't really like, you have to kind of detach like who you are as a fighter from like who you are as a human being. And that's really hard to do, you know, when like your whole life is revolved around fighting for so long. But, you know, that's like one thing I've noticed that those guys do really well, is that they're like, this is me as a human being, this is me as an athlete. And those are two different things. You know, so like the same guy that like can go like to war, like bloody war on Saturday night, is like hanging out with his kids Sunday. And that's a really, really hard thing to do. You know, like not everybody has that switch, but, you know, the guys that like, you know, I think are the happiest and, you know, the best off like later in life are the guys that like can turn it on and off when they need to.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us, man. That was really insightful. Thanks for sharing your story, man. I know we've heard it a little bit on a few of our podcasts, but hopefully our audience really enjoyed getting to hear your story. Is there anything else you want to leave the audience with before we sign off?
God bless you.
We appreciate that, man. Is there somewhere they can find you on social media?
Everything's just Cody Stamen, but don't expect a whole lot, because I'm like probably the least active on social media amongst my colleagues. Like,
you post some duck hunting stuff. We can say that. You got to make that happen.
Yeah, anything but fighting.
I love to make that happen. Yeah.
Anything but fighting, man. Yeah, duck hunting. I'm down.
Do it.
I love duck hunting, so I'd love to teach it too.
Make it happen, man. Go check him out, man. Cody Stamen on all social media platforms. Guys, let them know where they can follow you.
No, all social media platforms, Ocho Benji.
All platforms, Fredo's Fix.
Go ahead and follow the podcast page. It's going to be ontherun.pod on Instagram, ontherun.pod on TikTok, On The Run Podcast on YouTube. Follow my personal Instagram. It's going to be at 1OTRB. Thank you guys so much for joining us this week, man. We really appreciate all the love you guys are showing on all the recent episodes. We'll be back next week with another episode, man. Peace.